One Jump Ahead, Ray Humphreys, the Project Gutenberg ebook of One Jump Ahead. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: One Jump Ahead, Author: Ray Humphreys. Release date: May 13, 2025. Ebook 76082. Language: English. Original publication: New York, Street & Smith Corporation, 1929. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebooks/76082. Credits: Roger Frank. Asterisk start of the project GUTENBERG EBOOK. One Jump Ahead. Asterisk: five men in Western attire standing on a town street with a saloon and restaurant visible in the background. One Jump Ahead by Ray Humphreys, author of Not of the Card, etc. That morning, bright and early, Manuel Perez was at the sheriff's office. He was there so early, in fact, that he found the office locked, and he had to wait around outside until he saw Sheriff Joe Cook and Shorty McKay, the deputy, coming up the walk. Then Manuel hobbled forward as quickly as he could manage with his wooden leg. There was a smile on his face, and his right hand was extended as he neared the two approaching officers. "Ah, senors," he exclaimed cordially. "Why, hello thar, Perez," said Sheriff Cook warmly, taking the Mexican's proffered hand. "Glad to see ya. When did you get back? Out on parole, I suppose?" "That ease eat parole," announced Perez, shaking hands with Shorty. "I get back early dees monin. Eat ease long time since I be here, eh, senors? Eat ease long time I be in eat de big house what ya call heem, 1, 2, 3 years, but now to parole he come and I be back." But the smiling Perez shrugged his shoulders. "I have no de dinra de money. No cow, no blah blah sheep, de place eat fall to eats. Ruin, when I go away to de big house ya say meb should I straighten. Up ya say, when I come out ya really help me, sheriff, so I come." The sheriff's eyes traveled swiftly over Manuel Perez. The Mexican, bad as he was, had always been pitied by the sheriff. Perhaps it was because Perez had one leg off just below the knee. He hobbled around on a peg. The sheriff had sympathy for any such unfortunate, even if he was a convicted rustler. Looking at him now, Sheriff Cook saw the marks of the penitentiary on his care-lined face and his lackluster eyes. Perez had aged in the 3 years he had been in prison. He wore a prison shirt now and a pair of coarse prison trousers. "Come in the office, Perez," invited Sheriff Cook. "I guess me and Shorty Meb can figure some way o' helpin' ya out. I guess the best thing to do is to try to get ya a job." "Si, senor," agreed Perez, hopefully. "Perez," said the sheriff after the trio had entered the office, "ya got off light when ya drawed 5 to 7 years. I know ya'd been rustlin' calves for a long time, although we couldn't prove but the one case on ya. I suppose ya're through with that for all time, eh?" "Si, I hope so," said the sheriff. "I'll ring up Earl Wettingel and CF. He can't put ya on as a sheep herder out to his place until we meb kin find something better. F Earl ain't got nothing open, I'll call Art Wachter and ask him to give ya a job, Perez. Me and Shorty ain't such hard hombres, Perez, as ya know. It was our duty to see ya got punished for rustlin', but now that ya're out on parole, we're more'n ready to help ya beat back F y'all juste on TH Square." "I swear eat," said Perez hastily. "How long you been out, Perez?" asked Shorty as the sheriff reached for the telephone directory. "I get out to big house yesterday noon," said Perez. "I catched a train to Salida. A friend bring me in wagon here. I come right to your office, but eat ease yet locked up." "Central, give me Monte Vista 234R, please," began the sheriff, but he hung up the receiver when the office door banged open and old grandpa McNeil stumbled into the office, his washed out blue eyes as wide as saucers. The sheriff and Shorty both sensed instantly that something was doing. Grandpa McNeil was too calm, too easygoing ordinarily, to come leaping into the office without waiting to knock, all breathless, his chin whiskers jerking convulsively as he tried to master his excitement. "Gents," burst out Grandpa wildly. Take it easy, Grandpa," suggested Shorty, jumping up to help the old man to the nearest chair. "Juice, catch your breath afore ya try any talkin'. You ain't seen a ghost, has ya, or the courthouse ain't on fire, or—" "Ghost fire?" cried Grandpa shrilly. "Huh, say, thar's devilment afoot, that's what. Leave it to me to find out about it, too. I wasn't a injun, scout fur nothing in my young days. Thar they was down under the bridge, workin' with them flash on and off lights and shovels and diggin' fur all they was worth." Ask Sheriff Cook suddenly, Who, how the heck do I know? Thundered Grandpa peevishly. I seen him, that's all. They was a buryin' a body, I figured, or a diggin' one up. Meb, I don't know, I wasn't so sure either until this mawnin'. Yes, see, I had a toddy laws night over to Pap Stewart's housen, but this mawin' I goes down thar under the bridge, and thar it is, purty as, ya please, a big hole. The sheriff looked at Shorty, and Shorty looked at the sheriff, while old. Grandpa fought for more breath. Manuel Perez, his face wearing a puzzled expression, got up and sauntered over to the window as though withdrawing as best he could from a conference that might be more or less private in nature, judging from Grandpa's preliminary revelations. Shorty glanced at Perez just as the sheriff, recovering himself, asked, Grandpa, question. Ya say ya seen a big hole under the bridge? Sure, cried Grandpa breathlessly. And tracks, too, they was two men. Down thar workin', law's night about midnight, and I could hear the shovels a-goin'. I leaned over the bridge and I could see there, flash on and off lights too. They dug up a big box and lugged it off. They waded Coyote Creek with it and, two men, repeated Sheriff Cook. Ya can't describe 'em. Describe 'em, heck, said Grandpa angrily. They was shatters, that's all shatters. I tell ya it was dark as a bag o' black cats. I went down this mawnin' and saw the hole in. There was a rap at the door and before the sheriff or Shorty could sing out an invitation to enter, it swung wide and in stepped Fred Spears, bubbling over with excitement. He wasted no time on preliminaries at all. He blurted his story right out. I seen something funny last night down under the bridge, he exclaimed. I was settin' down on the bank o' Coyote Creek with my gal friend when I hears two men common splashin' across the creek, sheriff, there, usin' spotlight. I figures they're robbers, Meb, and me and my gal just holds our breaths, so they don't see us, but they goes up under the end o' the Third Street Bridge and digs up a box and then they goes back across creek. The sheriff pushed his chair back from the desk. We know all about that, Fred, he said. Grandpa McNeil here, Zeus, reported it. I reckon we'd better go take a look at that hole right now, Shorty. As fur ya, Perez, I'll have to postpone seein' about a job fur. Ya a few minutes while we looks inter this whole business. Ya wait, here, and when we gets back I'll call some o' them sheep ranchers and, surely, agreed Perez, bowing, but meb I like go look at hole, too, f sheriff no object to eat. Half the town's thar now, put in Grandpa McNeil suddenly. I tell ya. Sheriff, it's devilment, that's what. There was a hole under the east end of the Third Street Bridge, sure enough, quite a hole. The two mysterious men, whoever they might have, been, had spaded over an area fully 12 by 10 feet. They had dug extensively, it appeared, to locate the box and had evidently taken it from a depth of some 2 feet or more near the far end of the excavation. The soft earth had crumbled in, however, and there was no telltale impression left to give the officers any accurate idea of the size of the box that had been unearthed. There was quite a crowd of interested citizens around and they had tramped out some of the signs about the place, no doubt. But the trail the men had taken to the river was plain enough and quite astonishing in itself. Great sufferin' Jack Rabbits, exclaimed the sheriff as he stared at it. That was some box they got out of thar, Shorty. Look it, they drug it. Clear to the river, a long, narrow box, thar's the trail clear as daylight right to the water. Yep, said Shorty glumly, and that's all thar is too. Thar ain't no footprints at all, boss. That box they dragged wiped out the prints. What do you know about that? The sheriff swore softly under his breath. This is a hot one, he remarked as he stared around the crowd. What, do you suppose could have come off here last night? Spears, ya saw the men, what did they look like, eh? Was it too dark for ya to get any descriptions? Spears, thus honored before the whole crowd, shook his head. I saw 'em purty plain, fur they passed close to me, he answered. They was both tall, easy over 6 feet and husky, and once when one feller was holdin' a flashlight and the other feller was stooped down, draggin', at the box they'd finally found. I saw that the stooped-over feller had light hair. I guess that was about all, exceptin' it was a big, long, narrow box they got out and drug away, and it was heavy, and thev must. Open big fellers because they lifted it and carried it as soon as they struck the creek agin on thar way back. I guess that's all. The sheriff put his hands on his hips. A fine howdy-do, he remarked savagely. Gosh knows what them birds dug up from under this bridge, buried treasure likely or meb a body, but more probably gold or some other kind o' loot, meb smuggled stuff from the border, and they didn't leave a blamed clue either. A nice mess, folks, I'll say. Shorty, what do you make o' it all? Shorty stared around blankly. I dunno, he said. It looks kinda funny, doesn't it? The buried box mystery forthwith became the great sensation of the San Luis Valley. There were all kinds of rumors afloat instantly, of course, and everybody had his or her pet explanation of the mystery. There were many who thought that a body had been exhumed from beneath the end of the bridge. There were as many others who firmly believed that a fortune in smuggled jewels or contraband narcotics from the border had been dug up and carried away. And there were many odd explanations, too. I maintains that it was Injun treasure, insisted old Grandpa McNeil, hotly, and I blame myself for not going right down thar when I saw them. Two ruffians working thar and stretching em out cold with my cane. I could o' done it too, if I had juice, been sure I saw em like I thought. I had them two toddies up to Pappy Stewart's house just afore. And en wall, I weren't sure I did see them two fellers thar. I could o' reached out and poked a stick at em and made em put up their hands, said Fred Spears. I was that close to em, but my gal friend was scared to death, and I didn't dare take no chances. Oh, course I could o' licked em both in a rough-and-tumble fight big as Thev was, but Vol, it weren't no time or place to start a lotto, cussin' and trouble. Sheriff Cook was worried. As soon as he got back to the office, trailed by the sad-looking Manuel Perez, he slumped into a chair and sighed in despair. If it ain't one thing, it's another with this job, Manuel, he explained. Did ya notice war that feller Shorty disappeared to? He say he look for clues, answered Perez. Oh, said the sheriff. Yes, I remember, so he did. Vol, I looked in. Thar wasn't any, Perez. What do you think about it, eh? Somebody had something valuable hid thar. See, said Perez. Meb some robbers long time ago hide stuff thar. Who knows, war I was in de big house, sheriff. I hear often those robbers speak o' burying their loot. The sheriff nodded. That's the answer, Perez, in my mind. It might have been some o' that. Lamosa Bank loot that was stolen 8 years ago, or meb some o' that. Camo stage gold bullion that was taken 12 years ago. I'll have to look up them old jobs, and speakin' o' jobs, I'll call up about yours right now, son. The sheriff was successful. On the third call, Jack Quinn, a sheep rancher on Larimer Creek, agreed to take on Perez, the ex-convict, provided the sheriff thought he would go straight. The sheriff said he did think so, and the deal was made, after which the sheriff lectured. Perez again got that honest fellow's sworn promise to be good and started him on his way with a loan of $2 for grub en route. Perez was bubbling over with gratitude. Gracias, sheriff, he exclaimed. I go Senor Quinn's at once. Meb. Someday Manuel Perez able to pay sheriff back for kindness. Watchin', si adios, senor, when Shorty reported some hours later that he had been unable to find a single clue in the vicinity of the 3rd Street Bridge, the sheriff was not at all surprised. He had not expected Shorty to find any. He said so. He also pointed out to his disappointed deputy that he himself had searched the scene rather thoroughly while making his first investigation of the place and had not found anything. It looked like a hopeless proposition. Not a danged clue, said the sheriff. But I got my mind made up as to what it was, Shorty. It wasn't nobody business. It was loot buried thar from the Alamosa Bank robbery 8 years ago. They never caught the crooks and never found trace o' the dough. It was that or else the loot, from the Camo stage robbery 12 years ago or from some other job. We ain't got a chance in 10 million o' land in them guys, despite the description Spears got. We kin check on the descriptions we got at the time o' them Alamosa and Camo stage robbers and see if they coincides with Spears' descriptions o' the men last night, but outside o' that. I'll check on 'em, said Shorty, moving toward the door. Go ahead, said the sheriff wearily, and meanwhile I'll stay here and do a little heavy thinking, Shorty. We can't afford to overlook no bets if thar are any bets. Ya remember what Fred Spears said, big giants o' fellers and one with light hair. It's a purty meager description, but it's all we got, Shorty. Sheriff Cook, however, had little time to do much heavy thinking, as he had put it. Shorty had not been gone more than 30 minutes when in came Doc Healy and Eddie Owens and Bert Clark, the county commissioners, and they were considerably excited. They got down to brass tacks immediately. Sheriff, said Owens, you ain't forgot, I trust, that this is the year o' the spring elections in this county. Y'are up for re-election. Agin, I presume, and so are we county commissioners. Ya remembers that? O' course. Vol, therefore, me and Doc Healy and Bert Clark figured we'd better drap in on ya and see what ya think about this buried box business. Everybody's talking. Sure they are. It's a sensation. It's either good business or bad business for all o' us, went on Owens sadly. If ya clears up the case, it's a big help, come election time, but if ya don't and the other side makes political capital O, you are failure, we're all liable to sink together. The sheriff frowned. You ain't telling me no news, he snapped. It's juice one danged thing after another in this office. We no sooner gets one case cleared up than here comes another, but this one, gents, this one ain't no cinch. We got no clues. Commissioner Bert Clark spoke up quickly. Vol, I'll tell you one thing, ya won't get no clue set, thar in your chair. After that remark, the atmosphere became rather strained. the sheriff, ignored Clark's question as one far beneath his notice. The other two, commissioners not being as frank as Clark, said nothing more on the subject. They spoke on the spring wheat prospects, the weather, the new railroad that was coming into Alamosa. They left with awkward farewells shortly after leaving a worried sheriff behind them. He growled as the door closed on them. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction o' arguin' with him about weather. I kin get clues set here in my chair or not, he grunted. I wouldn't dignify such an impudent question with an answer. Still, I reckon meb I'd best. He got up and slapped on his big black hat. I'll go down and look that place over agin, and he did. The crowd was gone now. Only a few boys hung around, thrilled with the very atmosphere of the place. The sheriff poked here and there. He followed the strange trail of the dragged box to the creek bank. He reassured himself that the trail did actually vanish in the creek bed. The bed was sandy, shifting sand that would cover any trail, almost instantly. And there was nothing about the hole now but a million footprints. The sheriff shook his head mournfully. No use, he muttered, no use. He stared about, trying to think if he could be overlooking anything. It did not seem so. He glanced this way and that, and a thought struck him. He wondered if Shorty had combed the dead weeds and the brush to both sides of the bridge end. It was hardly likely that it was worthwhile. Still, the sheriff went at the thing methodically enough. He strode back and forth, up and down, this way and that, covering all the weeded area on the south of the bridge without discovering anything other than old tin, cans, pieces of wood, scraps of iron, and the other debris that one might expect to find along a creek bank. He finally crossed under the bridge to the north side and began his investigations there. He had not been at work 10 minutes on that side when he stopped in his tracks with a surprised snort. By golly, he exclaimed, and stooping over, he picked up a rusty old black wallet. There was a rubber band around it. He snapped the band off and opened the wallet. Empty, visions of greenbacks, calling cards, the owner's name and address perhaps all faded away. Empty, but no, it wasn't empty after all. There was a newspaper clipping in one pocket of the old wallet, a clipping slightly yellowed with age. The sheriff took it out carefully, inspected it, held it closer to read, find no trace of bank robbers. Alamosa bandits fade into thin air. Clarion. Goes to press this Thursday. No trace has been found of the three gunmen who entered the Alamosa bank last week and got away with $8,000 in cash and $5,600 in negotiable securities. They have apparently disappeared into thin air. Sheriff Ralph Baird of Alamosa has worked tirelessly in an effort to trace the men, but without avail. The reward of $1,000, offered by the Colorado State Bankers Association, has so far borne no fruit. It is hoped, however, that Sheriff Cook read no further. He put the clipping back in the wallet. He placed the wallet in his pocket. Great sufferin' Jack Rabbits, he exclaimed hopelessly as his face grew longer. Juice, as I thought, it was TH Alamosa loot that was buried here. What them crooks got away with last night? 8 years, 8 years, that $8,000 plus that $5,600 in securities has been buried under this bridge here in Monte Vista, right under my nose. The sheriff stalked on like a man in a trance. Last night they come back and get it, provin' that I am asleep on the job. They was in town last night and got away clean. Further, that loot has been there 8 years, and now it's gone, and also them robbers must have been here a little after that Alamosa job 8 years ago, too. Bury the stuff in the first place. Gee whiz, what a nice mess now. The sheriff headed for his office with rapid strides. What the heck am I going to do? He asked himself as he strode along. It's a cinch thar's no catchin' them Alamosa robbers now ef they couldn't be catched 8 years ago when the trail was hot. Findin' that old wallet juice proves what I feared, and that's all. It don't help none otherwise. It juice makes the case more hopeless than ever. I can't see any use. The sheriff swallowed hard. No use in announcin' anything about the findin' o' the wallet, he decided disgustedly. It only makes matters worse than ever. It proves I was asleep 8 years ago to let that stuff be buried here then, and that I've been asleep every day since while it's been here as vol as last night when they come and got it. I better keep that wallet business under my hat. But he did not. When he got back to the office and found Shorty full of hope that the mysterious box case might be solved, he could not keep his secret. He cautioned Shorty first to keep what he was about to say in strictest confidence forever, and then he blurted out the sad truth. Shorty, we ain't ever going to catch them box fellers. They was the Alamosa robbers, sure enough. Look at here what I found in the weeds, down near the 3rd Street Bridge. The sheriff produced the wallet. Shorty read the clipping eagerly. When He had read it through and examined it closely. He looked up at the woebegone sheriff. "I still say," said Shorty, "that we got a chance." The next morning, the sheriff, having spent a sleepless night, came down to the office wan and haggard. He had no faith in Shorty's optimistic predictions of the evening before. Since finding the wallet with the telltale newspaper clipping in it, the sheriff had given up the box case as a matter that was not to be solved. It was hopeless, he had decided. There was nothing left to do now but to face the music, and the anticipated opportunity to listen to some sad music was not long denied him. The commissioners arrived shortly after 9 o'clock. "Vol," asked Commissioner Eddie Owens mournfully, "what luck, if any, has ya had in the box case, Sheriff? We are naturally anxious to know if ya got any clues." The sheriff answered the question carefully. "No luck whatever," said he. "Huh," said Commissioner Bert Clark. "That's bad, Sheriff, mighty bad. The public clamor is increasin. The rumor is spreadin' everywhere that meb we ain't going to ever solve the case." The sheriff took his pride in his hands, what he had left of it. He tried to smile at the commissioners and failed. "That rumor, gents," he said slowly, is juice about correct. I figure it's right. We ain't going to ever get the men who got that box, however." The sheriff produced the old wallet. "I found one clue," he said unhappily, "and this is it, a all wallet. Evidently dropped by 1-0, the crooks who come fur that box. Tharzay, clippin' inside that tells the tale. Here it is, ya gents kind read it." He passed over the clipping and sighed. After all, it would not have been right, he decided on the spur of the moment, to keep that thing a secret from the county commissioners. They had a right to know the worst. He watched their faces as Clark read the clipping aloud, and the sheriff knew it was his official death knell as sheriff of Monte Vista that the commissioner was reading. Clark finished. The commissioners were silent. "I take it that the clippin' settles the box mystery case and settles me," said the sheriff softly. "It means that clippin' that it was too. Oh, the Alamosa bandits who came back and got that buried loot, the Alamosa loot, the other night. It means we'll never get 'em. It means that they was not only here the other night, but that they was likewise here after the robbery when they buried the loot. Here twice, and we didn't get 'em either time. That loot was here all those 8 years, and we didn't get it." The commissioners coughed, fidgeted. "If it helps the party any, I'll up and resign," offered the sheriff meekly. "I have made up my mind. Ya can put up a new man fur sheriff come election and meb win with him, seein' ya probably can't win with me when this news gets out." Commissioner Clark nodded. "Ya're talkin' the matter sensible, sheriff," he agreed. "I think your suggestion is the only suggestion possible." The sheriff reached a trembling hand for a pad of paper. He would write out his resignation as a candidate for re-election now. It could be announced at once, and there was an interruption, however. Shorty and Manuel Perez and Fred Spears appeared in the open doorway suddenly. They entered quickly. The commissioners stared, but it was the sheriff who spoke up thickly in a strange tone. "Shorty, I'm busy juice now. If it ain't important, I wish ya'd wait outside." "Hello, Perez. Ya get fired if en your new job already?" "Good. Monin, Spears. Now if ya all will." "This matter won't wait," said Shorty, taking in the situation at a glance. "Whatever ya was aimin' to write down on that pad had better wait, boss. Looky here." Shorty yanked a bundle from his shirt front, a bundle wrapped in newspapers. He quickly broke the string that held it. He spread the bundle out on the sheriff's desk. Money, greenbacks, dozens of them, hundreds of them, a young fortune in currency. "Thar, boss," said Shorty softly. "Thar's what was in that box that was dug up out o' the ground under the end o' the 3rd Street Bridge the other night. It's money. About $6,000 in cold cash, as I counted it hastily. The box itself has been discarded somewheres, but it doesn't matter much. Perez here can tell us all about the box. In fact, he's already told me, confessed, that that dough is his loot from many a rustlin' deal afore he went to the pen. Ya remember he had no money. When we arrested him, he pretended to be broke. Vol, he was canny. Enough to have buried his roll under the bridge juice afore we pinched him, and while he was in stir, he planned how to get it." Shorty grinned at the startled commissioners. "Perez planned Vol, but I was juice, one jump ahead him all the time, it seems," Shorty went on. "He said he got in town the other mornin', from the pen, havin' left Thar at noon. I thought it strange he should come direct to us to get him a job when he could o' gone to his old Mexican friends. He was still playin' that poverty gag. I checked up on the pen, though, and found he had left Thar 12 hours earlier than he said, so that he could o' been here when the box was dug up. Perez and Spears here dug up the box. I had suspected that Perez was in on it as soon as I heard the report, because the trail o' the men had been obliterated by the dragon o' the box, as we thought. And why? Because Perez knew his peg leg marks would give him away. That's why. They came and went by Wadden the Creek. but it wasn't a box they dragged after them. Perez simply scraped his shovel along as he made fur the creek, Bane careful to follow the same path down as he had took Common. Up, Perez got to our office early for two reasons. First, to impress on us that he wanted a job, that he was broke, and that he meant to go straight. Also, he wanted to be here when we opened so he could hear if Grandpa McNeil, who had stumbled onto things, reported to us. When Grandpa came in with his story, Perez moved to the winder, signaling Spears, who was waiting. Spears came in and reported what he had seen, Bane careful to give us bum descriptions. All eagle-eyed McNeil couldn't describe the men, it was so dark, but Spears could, and that's why I suspected Spears. When ya found the wallet, boss, I was sure it had been planted to throw us off the track on a hopeless angle. I learned at the Clarion office that Spears had been in, right after the case had become public, to give his story to the editor. He was alone in the office for a time, the old files are thar. I looked up the issue 8 years back that carried the item that was in the wallet. Sure enough, that clip-in had been clipped and juice recent because thar was new fingerprints on the dusty file. See? So I went out to the ranch where ya had got Perez his job and cross-examined him. He had the dough on him. He confessed everything, including the fact that Spears had been in the rustling game with him afore he went to the pen. Spears, however, didn't know where the swag was hid until Perez got back, told him, and together they arranged the job o' recovering their dough easy enough if all Grandpa McNeil hadn't buted in. The faces of the county commissioners relaxed. This, said Commissioner Clark, juice about clinches the election this spring, Sheriff. Ya done fine work. Ya got our heartiest. Congratulations. The story o' how ya solved the most baffling case in years in Monte Vista will sure make good readin'. Folks all through the valley will lift their hats to ya, Sheriff, and vote us all back in ter office sure as shootin'. The sheriff pushed away the pad that he had been about to write on when Shorty brought in Perez and Spears. Yes, he agreed, grinning, I guess the election's won right now. F, re-elected gents, I has but one pledge to make now, and that is I will reappoint Shorty McKay as my deputy for another term because, Vol, gents, I like Shorty a heap. Amen to that, said Commissioner Clark fervently. Transcriber's note. This story appeared in the July 20, 1929 issue of Western Story Magazine. End of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK 1 jump ahead asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM. Concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1. A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See, paragraph 1C below, there are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg. Electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of DAMAGES, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1(f)(4). Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1(f)(3), this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1(f)(5). Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1(f)(6). Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work; b, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work; and c, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website. An official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the project. Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks.